Here's our Raptors analyst and good buddy, Jack Armstrong. How you doing, Jack?
Guys, how are you?
We're doing well. We got into the scheduling a little bit in terms of the Christmas schedule that came out. The Raptors aren't a part of that. I don't think anyone's surprised by it. But I'd be curious to get your take on the teams that are involved. I mean, there's a lot of superstars there. But I noticed, once again, they're falling into the trap down in the States with TNT and ESPN. They got Golden State playing opening night and on Christmas. And without Klay Thompson, I don't think they're going to do anything this year. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. So how do you feel about that?
Well, they're on the Zion train again, you know, with New Orleans. You know, so, hey, look, I mean, they're all about ratings. And, you know, the two TV partners in the U.S. gave the NBA a 9-year, $24 billion U.S. TV deal. And it's a collaborative effort. It's not just the NBA people putting that schedule together. It's the networks pounding their fist on the desk saying, this is what we want, this is what we expect, this is what we're paying for. And, you know, so if they think Golden State is going to give them some ratings in Northern California, a large market, and that there's still enough appeal for Steph and his Q rating and all those other things, in spite of not having Klay, they still have Draymond Green and Steph Curry, and they're the Warriors, and people want to see what they look like now. And, they picked up Kelly Oubre, and they had the number two pick in the draft. They have Andrew Wiggins, and they will be competitive. Whether they'll be a playoff team or not, probably the Phoenix Suns and the New Orleans Pelicans and teams like that are going to have a lot to say about it.
Jack, we were talking about it earlier. I told Brian he shouldn't be surprised, and I don't think that unless they do something spectacular this year or next summer, wouldn't expect it again next year either. That's just the way it's going to be. They got their bone for winning the NBA championship, and that's the way it's going to be moving on.
Well, it's tough. I mean, and you know this. I mean, not only a knee injury, but now an Achilles for Klay Thompson. I mean, that's tough, man. I mean, and they got cap challenges as well. Forget cap challenges, luxury tax. I mean, big, big money. And they have a brand new arena. And you're going through a pandemic now, and they're just getting crushed. But every team's getting crushed right now. But they sunk a lot of their own money into it. And, they're dying for a return on investment. You got all these suite holders and all that. And, there's challenges dealing with that. And, by the time their window opportunity could be gone by the time things open up again. And, you know, if you're selling for that team, it makes it that much harder.
Well, and I think I was talking about the Raptors getting their bone last year playing on Christmas, and that they're probably...
Oh, yeah, I thought you were talking about Golden State. About the Golden State's window.
No, right. Yeah,
I apologize.
Well, and in terms of something big happening, I think we all know what that would be. It's either a title again, which I'm not sure is overly likely this year, but they're going to be a very good team. It's the pursuit of Giannis and his availability, and he made some comments recently, and to his credit, he keeps saying, hey, if guys want to join me in Milwaukee, that'd be great. You know, if LeBron wants to come here, Anthony Davis wants to come here, Kevin Durant wants to come here, I'm happy. I don't need to be the number one guy or even the number two guy. We all know none of that's going to happen. LeBron just re-signed. Davis is going to sign long-term in L.A. KD's in Brooklyn. But in terms of his pursuit of playing with great players, how can we apply that to the Raptors? And I kind of see this as an opportunity for Pascal Siakam to really put his name out there. And he's got to have a great year because that's going to be a part of the sales pitch, I would assume. You know, if he's going to leave Milwaukee and he wants stars to help him win titles, Pascal Siakam is probably going to have to be that guy.
Well, first of all, Old Dog, I apologize because I misinterpreted your question there before. And I hope
that's
I answered
right,
the Golden State.
Yes, you did.
The Golden State part, right?
Yeah.
To your point, first of all, about the bone on Christmas Day. No, I'm with you. I mean, this will be my 23rd season with the Raptors, and we played Christmas Day when Vince Carter 1 year in New York at the Garden, and then obviously the bone that was thrown with a home game last year against Boston after the win in the title. But you're right. I mean, those networks have a lot to say, and the fact that the Raptors don't register on the Nielsen's and Nielsen ratings in the U.S. is a problem. To them, at least. But they don't realize the incredible following across Canada that the Raptors have and worldwide. And then when you look at the Giannis pursuit, Brian, to your point, yeah, it's going to be really important for a Pascal Siakam to take that next step this year. He played really well at the back end of the championship run and was tremendous in the playoffs for them. And then the early part of last season, a good percentage of it, he was really, really good and earned that contract. And unfortunately, in the bubble, things went south for him. So he's got to get back on track. He's got to get back to being that player, that hungry, hard-nosed guy that outran, out-hustled, outworked everybody. And you got to get back to being that blue-collar, lunch-pail guy that just nobody outworks, nobody outcompetes. And the other stuff, the pretty stuff, the spicy speech stuff, like in terms of making threes and all the skill stuff that analytics people get all caught up in, that'll take care of itself. I have confidence that, you know, he's putting the time in the gym and those elements of his game will happen. But, you know, concentrate on what you can control and the other stuff will come around. I feel that way. And, if you're a guy like Giannis, sure, you're looking at a guy like Siakam. You're looking at Van Vliet, by the way, who had a big part in beating you 2 years ago in the Eastern Conference Finals. And you're also looking at, hey, how's OG Anunoby coming around? You know, what's his ceiling? What's his future? And I think it's an important year for him. They got to make a contractual decision on him and where his future is. And I really liked how he played last year. He kept growing and maturing. And I think he's trending in a positive direction.
With Jack Armstrong. So LeBron James signs an extension today, a two-year extension. That'll keep him in L.A. for the next 3 years. And everyone's got a different viewpoint on why now. You know, is it to give an assurance to Anthony Davis? I'm here and I'm with you, so lock in on that long-term deal. I got to believe that's part of the factor. But I saw Brian Windhorst write about this earlier, and I think he brings up an interesting point. That LeBron also is well aware of his age, and he is at the top of his game. He just won a title. Get it now. Lock it in. So if your game goes south in 2 years and you're looking for a new deal, it doesn't get ugly. Where do you stand on this? And obviously the reasoning makes a lot of sense from the Lakers' perspective, but why would LeBron lock in on a two-year extension, something he has not been prone to do at any point throughout his career when he still has term left on his deal?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting point. I had a guy in the business say to me recently, who I respect a lot, and he made a good point. We're chatting about Giannis. He's like, you know, I said, hey, if I'm Giannis, I lock in on my deal with Milwaukee right now, and then if I'm not happy a year from now, I force my way out.
Right.
You know, and yep. But at least you get the money. And you know, the point that was interesting point made to me is like, hey, look, the money in Milwaukee is I wouldn't say secondary to each and every one of us. We're like, are you kidding me? It's not secondary. It's a lot of money. But these guys make a lot of money on endorsement opportunities and apparel, sneakers, you name it, not only from a North American perspective, but a worldwide perspective. And these are deals that aren't just for a five-year term. In many ways, they're a lifetime deal. And so... for a guy like Giannis, the Milwaukee decision in terms of where I play is part of it, but it's, you know, the big part is the branding element of it. And for a guy like LeBron, I mean, he is an iconic brand. Nonetheless, he's a baller, and he understands for his brand to really be what he wants it to be to finish his career. He wants to be at a good place and finish his career the right way, and he wants to show that, hey, man, I'm all in here in L.A. Now, he's obviously represented Rich Paul as his childhood buddy. That's the agent, and he's also the agent for Anthony Davis and probably half the guys on the Lakers right now. And there's a lot of side shenanigans going on between, the front office of the Lakers, Rob Pelinka and company, and, Rich Paul, wink, wink. I'll take care of your guy now, and you're gonna deliver me the big fish later. But nonetheless, if Memphis did that, or Oklahoma City did that, they'd be slapped with a major penalty, but nonetheless, everyone looks the other way when it's the Lakers. But I think LeBron, bottom line, wants to make sure that he finishes career in L.A. It's good for him, not only short-term, but long-term, the rest of his life and the other interests that he has. And I think it also shows to his friend Anthony Davis that, hey, this is where I want to be. Let's team up and let's have a great 3-4 year run together and ride off into the sunset for him at least.
Jack, we were talking about the COVID numbers starting to come in, and Brian, I think he mentioned, what is it, 10% of the league almost tested positive? About that?
Almost 10% of the tests.
Yeah. I mean, almost 10% of the league. How difficult do you think it's going to be to navigate this season with not, I mean, it's shown the bubble works. You put these guys in a bubble, you test them, but to say to guys, I mean, even you, Jack, I mean, when you're traveling, you don't mind going out for dinner, having a beer, having whatever. How difficult is it going to be to keep these guys contained or just kind of follow the guidelines and the rules, all teams, all players throughout a season?
No, I stay in my room, extensive Bible study. I don't know what you're talking about, dog. The reality is this. I'm not the least bit surprised that those numbers came out today because these guys have all, and I heard Brian mention it before I came on, they're all scattered all around North America. So now when they come back, it's not surprising at all. It's reflective of what's going on in the United States and Canada right now. It's a challenge. They're going to have daily testing. It's not a bubble. It's not foolproof, and there will be challenges. I am confident in the NBA in terms of their ability to dot I's, cross T's, that they've learned a lot from Major League Baseball, MLS, and obviously the NFL, college football, college basketball, what they're doing right now, tennis, golf, you name it. And their own experiences as well as the WNBA and the NHL in terms of the bubble environment. So they'll have as good a low element of protocol in place to keep it at as minimum as possible. Here's the challenge. For people that want to get it all caught up into making these big predictions, I think this is a tough year to do it because if you have a player that's out, he's out for 12 days. That could be 7 games.
Right.
It could be, and think about it. We haven't even gotten into yet. Oh, how about a high ankle sprain? How about a knee sprain? How about a hamstring pull or a calf issue or upper body injury, whatever the case may be, a concussion, on top of the COVID stuff. So now you're talking, and let's not forget load management. We're playing 72 games in a shorter time span. You're going to have that with some older players on back-to-backs or 3-4, 4-5, whatever. So you're going to have some of that stuff. So to me, it could swing things pretty significantly during the course of a season. And here's the other point I want to bring up, which I think is really important. How important is seeding this year? I don't know. Are our playoffs going to be played in front of fans? Is the vaccine going to make that much of a dent by the time playoffs come around? I hope so. I pray for everyone in society. I'll say this. If the Raptors played Game 7 last year where they should have, and that would have been rightly earned against the Celtics in Scotiabank Arena, the Raptors are in the Eastern Conference Finals. If the Clippers play a Game 7 in Staples Center against the Denver Nuggets, in spite of them coughing up Game 5 and 6, there's no way they're losing Game 7 on their home court. They're in the Western Conference Finals against the Lakers. And in my opinion, I don't think the Milwaukee Bucks lose to the Miami Heat in the East Semis because they have home court. And all that went away because of the bubble. So to me, I think it's all about just getting in. And you're going to have some variation in issues with not only injuries, but more importantly, with potential positive tests that are going to impact it. So I think coaches and I think organizations, particularly if fans aren't going to be at games or you're going to have minimal number of fans when we get into the playoffs, that you're not going to get as fixated where you play, because we saw this last year, neutral court or a minimal home court really favors the team that doesn't have to deal with it as much.
Yep, that's a great point, and I think that's likely where we're going into the future, including the Raptors, who, even if there are fans in the stands, it's in Tampa. You know, even if they have 5,000 fans, they're probably not even going to be rooting for the Raptors, you know, depending on who's in town.
And so, they're all senior citizens, and you're going to have to keep the music loud to keep them awake.
Yeah, it's a very different world down there. We know the way Florida works, absolutely. Well, we'll see. I mean, the ball is going to be tipped off in a couple of weeks, and we look forward to finally hearing you again and seeing you back in action, and we'll do this again soon. Thank you, Jack.
Guys, have a great night.
There's Jack Armstrong, our TSN Raptors analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. This month, they're giving away gifts with the purchase or lease of any new in-stock vehicle with rates from 0% right next to Wonderland and MapleToyota.com. We haven't really brought up the Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Clippers story in The Athletic because it just feels like we've done this like 10 times over the past 2 months. Every couple of weeks, there's a new story about how Kawhi is the biggest diva in pro sports.
I talk about a change of opinion of a guy changing as the articles keep getting written. Like, just incredible. I mean, you can get into some of the details, Brian, of what's going on there, but it's a joke, man.
But would you take him? I mean, would you take him back on the Raptors?
Of course you would. But the report indicated that Kawhi and Paul George, they basically could determine when you're practicing, like the scheduling.
That's ridiculous.
That's so ridiculous. We knew about Kawhi living in San Diego, but this has just reiterated that he was often late for practice and for flights. And teammates believed on the Clippers that Paul George and Kawhi Leonard basically could dictate when they were going to play, including during the game. Yeah. You know, second quarter, no, I'm good. I need another 2 minutes.
That's
like,
weird.
What are you talking about? And we know that superstars get preferential treatment. That goes without saying that applies to every sport.
I know.
Every
when
single
you're giving
sport.
Full organizational control to two players,
that's
you're
too
doomed.
Much. That's
you're
obscene.
Doomed.
It's too much, and that's not normal. And it's on the players. I blame the players for not thinking about their teammates and thinking about how they might be perceived, because that doesn't make sense in a team environment where Kawhi and Paul George have played for teams forever. They've been the best player on their teams forever. But you want your teammates to like you and respect you.
You blame the players, and we talked about Jerry Jones a couple of days ago. I blame the owner, and that's desperation of wanting to be good and wanting to draw players to your organization. And you basically conceded and capitulated and gave them whatever they wanted and said, there you go. And it backfired. It's a joke.
Well, and the coach... He was a good coach. Correct?
Doc Rivers has a long history. But it didn't help. But I think if Steve Ballmer told Doc Rivers this is the way it works, Doc Rivers clearly had no power. But I think there's a lot of blood on a lot of different hands. But you guys have been in the rooms. Why would you want your teammates to think that you look down on them and you're better than them? Like
If I was ever in that situation and I was a second-tier player, I'd say, no thanks, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Not doing it.
Yep, exactly.